You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
I'm so excited to tell you JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. What I love about Walker Hayes is his laid-back nature. He's a family man, and being a country megastar while also having 7 kids, you know he likes to keep his style cool and casual. This new collection is perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear, affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th. Just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
The Around the League podcast has great body language.
This is the Around the League podcast, and I've just got one question to ask.
Will Chris Wessling eat his softball?
It's looking like it! I'm Greg Rosenthal alongside Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and oh, look who is in the studio for the first time as a dad, Dan Hansis. What are you doing here?
I am not done with my marathon paternity leave yet. However, I will say this. I had to come in today. Because I need to know that. What is that question again, TD?
Will Chris Wessling eat his softball pads?
Well, Chris Wessling?
I think anyone who has ever commuted to work, you have days where it's all green lights and you don't have a care in the world. You just cruise on into work. And then there are days where there are red lights. You're stuck there. 2 times in a row through the red light, especially in L.A., you can feel the stress building.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You can't get rid of it. Today, this morning as I was coming in, my Twitter mentions had already set a record for most mentions in a morning. And there were some very creative and thoughtful and a few jabs here and there, but very fun. Today was a weird day. I got every red light. But as soon as I started to feel the stress coming on, it just immediately turned green. And then, like, at the last one, it turned green, and John Prine kicked onto my music playlist, and I was just in a beautiful spot. And I feel like that's a metaphor for the Browns quarterback situation. It appears that Brian Hoyer will start opening day.
Oh, it sure does. The coach announced
that's
it.
That's the red light.
Yeah.
But the green light is I've got a Sessler. There's probably an injury coming up in the next.
Oh my God. Now that is just terrible thing to say.
For any new listeners to the podcast, and there should be some out there, we're picking them up each week. Chris Wessling said way back in May or June sometime that he would eat a pair of his softball pants if Brian Hoyer was starting over a healthy Johnny Manziel in week one. And week after week, he's been defiant, indignant that this atrocity could ever happen. And here, today, Wednesday, August 20th, Mike Pettine announced Brian Hoyer, week one starter. Mark, you're the Browns fan in the room. How do you feel when you heard the news?
There's a tension in the room right now. I came in. I'm only in here for 10, 15 minutes, and I'm going back to my wife, Emily, and son, Jack. I'm looking forward to seeing them again. But I need to just sort this out because, Wes, there's heat. Mark, visibly uncomfortable next to Wes right now, I just got to say.
I don't know about that. I think you got to be honest. Anyone in the city of Cleveland that felt any, shock of hope when they 3 months ago, just 3 months ago, picked up what was meant to be the franchise quarterback, and 3 months later, I mean, it's a worst-case scenario, not because Brian Hoyer's a bad guy or something, but because your rookie quarterback, when there are 5 other rookies who look ready for prime time. Johnny Manziel looks completely unprepared to play in the two games we've seen. And bang, in you know,
yep.
they mentioned today that he may be essentially redshirted this year.
You said it was a disaster a little bit. Just as a Browns fan, you felt like a disaster. But
sure.
Don't we want to think about Manziel in the long range? I mean, is this that big a deal that he's not the week one guy?
I don't. In the long range, I actually think the worst thing that could have happened in a way is roll him out against Pittsburgh and then the Saints, have him get massacred, and then have to go to Brian
Hoyer.
So isn't
this good then?
I don't think either situation's good. What's good would have been Manziel has blown us away in two preseason games. He's what we thought he'd be. He's the reason Chris made that bet way back then with some surety,
no,
but he isn't that
Hoyer,
guy.
Hoyer was the reason I made the bet.
Well, you also, and, well, you, but you also expressed some faith that they yes. went out and got a playmaker in Manziel.
Right.
That's what I'm talking
That's
about.
That's the frustration, I would think, on Wes's part, is Wes did have it right, by all appearances, what we've seen from Hoyer, which has not been good.
It's not been
and
good.
Wes basically said Hoyer is who we thought he was. He's a backup second or third string guy. He played like that in the preseasons, and the Browns still gave him the job. So this is there are some parallels when I lost all those sandwiches on Johnny Manziel and the Cowboys where I felt like I made the right call. It just somehow got taken away from me. And that's what's happening to Wes right now. He knows what it's like for life to be unfair. Red lights everywhere.
It is. As I told Greg and Mark yesterday before any of this happened, I feel like I had this entire scenario correct except for the part that Johnny Manziel has played absolutely horribly.
Right.
Well, that's a big except, though. That's half of the equation.
It's not half of the equation. If we go back to the tape, it all started with me foaming at the mouth over America forgetting who Brian Hoyer was. It didn't start over Johnny Manziel.
You were very high on Manziel in the pre-draft process and
post-draft. The softball pants never would have gotten involved if it was just about how well Manziel's going to do. It was all about Brian Hoyer.
So it has to be a little bit about Manziel because you never – no man as smart as you would bet on Cleveland's quarterback situation in general – without the sense that someone has arrived to remove all the chaos that's been attached to that for 25 years. It's a little bit about Manziel.
Right, but the softball pants come out when there is outrage over the entire country getting a story wrong. For instance, people saying a couple of years ago that Jake Ballard, the Patriots, stole him from the Giants even though his knee was ruined. Or people acting like Brian Hoyer is a high-quality NFL starter. That's when the outrage comes.
Well, there was a lot of heat, as Dan is alluding to, at the desk, and maybe it's dissipated by now. At
no,
one point,
hasn't.
You did try to make the case that you were 100% right about the softball pick.
I did not make the case. I never you put 100% in my mouth. I never said that.
I thought you said you were no. told you felt
I
like
I said the scenario played out exactly how I thought it would, except for, and I use the phrase, Johnny Manziel has sucked.
I mean, what? I think Wesley was taking a jab at himself there to some degree,
what,
too.
What about on Monday night? What were you thinking when you were watching Manziel Hoyer? We haven't even talked about that game yet.
I was thinking, turn the TV off.
Yeah. Hoyer left an opening, and Manziel was awful.
The big loser, by the way, Wes, substantially a loser potentially because his health is in danger now because we know how dangerous polyester, nylon, zipper, other composite parts can be to your insides. Mark, also potentially a loser here because this is not exactly how I'm sure Browns fans. And I think back to that guy, the YouTube clip of the Browns fan in that bar in Cleveland on draft night breaking down in tears, crying with tears of joy over Manziel and how finally everything was taken care of. And right now it looks muddled as ever, their quarterback situation. We shouldn't get too crazy about this. By the way, it's a preseason.
If it's the Browns, I promise you that we'll see both of them, and we'll probably see Rex Grossman too.
You know what's great about it, though, is
that's how it's played.
I was called at 5:25 this morning with this news from our news desk. David Ely wanted to let me know they had broken the story. Mark was already up writing it. He was at work at 4:44 a.m. according to his email, and. The first thing I thought about was Wes. It wasn't about the Browns or how it could change the AFC North. I was like, oh, my God, Wes is going to eat his softball pants. How long did it take you to think about it? Wasn't that the first thing you thought about?
Immediately, of course, because we're so plugged into the softball. We've been talking about this for months and months. And my first thought was I started to move on. I moved on. Forget about the NFL end of it. I was like, how do we move this forward with how is Wes going to actually eat these pants? But it's not technically over yet.
Well, and a lot of people complain that the Browns, when they put it out on Twitter, should have announced Browns announced Chris Wessling will eat his softball pants. Don't we? The quarterback scenario is always muddled, and that's secondary here.
We got a lot of really great tweets, some good photoshopping of Wes digging into pants. Mark, you've actually reached out literally to a Food Network celebrity to
help
us.
Yeah, well, it's by, you know, circle. You live in L.A. and you have all sorts of friends, but we are friends with a woman that won Food Network Celebrity Star Show. Her name's Artie. She is an outrageously good Indian cook. And I've tweeted at her. I have not heard back because this is a complex request. But I said, help us cook these things up.
And it's funny, too, because Greg's wife, Emeka, also a chef, but she washed her hands of this months ago. She
Wisely.
Said she didn't want to be involved with this.
Yeah. You know, we have a daughter, and she said, I can barely have the energy to cook for our daughter sometimes, or us. There's no way I'm cooking up softball pants for your goofy friends. So.
All right, Wes,
before
I go, because I got to get going, because I do have this family to get back to, but I want to ask you, if your Sessler, which I hope your Sessler is wrong, you know, we don't want the guy to get hurt.
Well, look, I'd rather be alive and witness a Brian Hoyer injury than dead and he's healthy.
All right, if Hoyer gets through the game unscathed and he does start in Pittsburgh, you're going to eat some softball pants, right?
In some fashion, yes.
Okay, that's good. You're a man of your word, and I feel like I can relate with you because of the Manziel on draft day thing a little bit. Only my life's not in danger. Yours is.
Yeah, in some fashion, it will be done. I'm not promising that zippers will go down my throat or that the elastic band will go down my throat. I'm not sure about that.
You know how Wes, we know Wes is desperate. He said he was also rooting potentially for a Manziel injury because technically the bet was – that it was only over a healthy Manziel. And I said, the spirit of the
Now that it's been announced,
okay.
I will bow to that even if Johnny gets injured from here on out.
I was going to say, this has been such a painful moment for Wes that he's turned into like a Philadelphia Eagles sports fan in the 1990s.
I wish we could have had TD by our desks earlier today because Damashek got involved. There was a lot of back and forth. It was heated.
Yeah, it got a little heated for
got
a while.
Got heated. Yeah, that's what happens, though. That's why we even have this podcast because it's a
yeah. Can I go now?
Yeah.
Yes.
Bye.
Please,
Wes.
Wait.
I'm sorry that this is working out this way for you.
In 10 seconds, Jack. Yeah. A description of Jack in 10 seconds.
Jack Carson hands us. By the way, Carson has nothing to do with Carson Palmer, but it is funny, and there were a lot of tweets.
Carson Daly.
Yeah, it was Carson Daly. Yes, the MTV VJ. There were a lot of tweets comparing Colt, Mark's child, and Carson mine. Mm. Of course, Carson Palmer superior as a quarterback to Colt McCoy.
By the way, we don't know that yet.
Wow.
Colt McCoy's career not over
I was
yet.
Asked if I was going to have a child and name him Blaine Wessling.
No, it's great. Everything is great. It's great to have a son.
And before we let you go, TD wants one word.
One question, and not to get too deep here. I hear a lot from
he is
people
mine.
That well, that's not it. I'm glad to know. I hear a lot from people that when you have that first kid, you totally become a different man. So for you, when was that moment? Was it when, you know, your wife went into labor? Was it when you first saw your kid, when you first held your kid, when your kid first came home? What was that moment for you where your life completely changed?
There was, I will say this without getting too gooey and sentimental, the first night in the hospital when I was laying on the horribly uncomfortable couch and I had young Jack on my chest, you know, that connected. Oh, wow, this is showtime. This is my son.
Yeah.
That was a great moment. I don't know if I've completely changed as a man just yet, but maybe that's what this process is over the next week or so.
Or the rest of your life.
Or that.
Right, yeah. It's not going to end.
Yeah.
Next week or so.
I don't know what's happening.
You aren't in the wood yet. It's out of the woods yet, buddy.
Dan, thank you for stopping by on this momentous day in Around the League podcast history. You gave me some chills there with that story. I love it.
Great. And by the way, good job by Greg. Successfully predicted that one of the best feelings ever also is getting home from the hospital for the first time. That was true as well. Fatherhood's good. Wes, don't die. I love you. And I'll see you guys very soon. Carry
Fairly
on.
Fairly well.
All right.
Bye.
Thanks
Bye-bye.
For coming in, Dan.
So Dan hands us leaving the studio right now. And we forgot, we got a big show here today. But quickly, let's do a little bit of news first, TD.
If you smell what The Rock is cooking.
The Rock is going to cook up my softball pants?
Oh.
That's an option.
I didn't even put that all together.
I hit up The Rock, you know, we go way back, and he sent a little message for you.
If you smell what The Rock is cooking.
All right.
I thought that was a SummerSlam reference. See? I know what's going on in the world.
I'm too old to watch WWE.
Yeah,
I was WWF when I still watched
it. I was too old when I was 14 or so.
Yeah.
Give me a break. Let's talk a little bit about the news angle of Johnny Manziel before we move on, just for a minute. Mike Pettine announced today, of course, that Brian Hoyer was going to be the starter for week one. He also indicated that Johnny Manziel would not be coming in as a quote-unquote package player. It sounded like they didn't want to take him off the bench. They didn't want Hoyer to feel like he had a short leash. When do we think Johnny Manziel is going to be on the field?
I don't buy that for a minute, and I'll tell you why. Because I think by halftime of the first game against Pittsburgh, they're going to realize they have a deficiency at that position, and they're going to have to use everything they can to surprise opponents. What can the Cleveland Browns do to surprise a good defense?
I'd be shocked if Hoyer is still the quarterback after the week four bye.
I would, too.
Agreed. I think we all kind of feel that bye is a natural time to make that shift.
That's why, other than, you know, Chris's internal organs, I don't think this is a huge deal, because we all think he's going to be out there in week five. So, you know, it's week five, week one. This will give him a little extra time.
It's a huge deal, and then there was some sentiment that the Browns could be a very competitive team, upwards of 500, and make some noise in the AFC North. And now they have Brian Hoyer starting the season after a very abysmal preseason. And Johnny Manziel looks like he's not going to be ready. Even after a week four bye, you wouldn't think he's going to be an asset.
And one thing about this is a rookie, it depends what system you come into, because, and I think we all think Kyle Shanahan is a good play caller. Historically, that's true. But he's got a tough system for a guy like Manziel. You come from Texas A&M where you've got two-word play calls, and they're talking about 18-word play calls. And we saw on Monday night that he struggled with that even in that interview with Gruden. And then there's Andrew Hawkins and other people coming out today talking to Aditi Kinkabala from NFL Media, saying that, listen, it's understandable, but we have to, in the huddle, actually sometimes even work with him to finish the play call. He's not ready.
That's it. I mean, Pettin said before training camp started, the battle is Manziel versus the playbook. And I think he lost it, at least in the short term. For a couple weeks, he lost it. And one telling quote I thought from Manziel today, quote, "I didn't necessarily feel like I was ready, and I felt like there's steps I still needed to take." I mean, if you have a quarterback saying you don't feel like he's ready, maybe the coaches picked up on that too, and there's no need to force it. That's why I have no problem with them making the move. It's a little disappointing as a football fan, but I have no problem with it.
I thought the most telling quote was when he was saying, "If anyone saw me in my first year and a half at Texas A&M, you could tell that I was terrible."
That's true.
And he drew out the word terrible and said, "Look, I was not ready to hit the field." And he said, "I'm confident that in, you know, within that amount of time in the NFL, I'll be ready for this."
I think if Cleveland made a mistake here, if you really want to, in terms of roster preparation, because these other quarterbacks, this Matt Castle bridge quarterback situation, if we really didn't know what Hoyer was going to be, if you're the Cleveland front office just hoping he's healthy, you needed to go out and get a better veteran to bridge this gap. They didn't do that.
Yeah, I totally agree. Hoyer, of course, tore his ACL last year. Unfortunately, one of our favorite players in the league, at least mine, Darnell Dockett, tore his ACL this week, placed on injured reserve. Quickly, before we get to our AFC preview today, they placed Dockett on injured reserve on Wednesday. Does this, you know, take out the Cardinals as a interesting either team of ATL or even a playoff team? I have them in the playoffs right now. Do you think this changes their outlook?
I didn't think they were going to the playoffs anyway, because I had already thought they lost too much from the front seven and Darrell Washington and Carlos Dansby. Now they lose Dockett. Bill Smith, one of our researchers here at NFL Network, came up with a great stat that the Cardinals defense, which was number one in the NFL last year against the run, gave up about 3.4 yards per carry against the run with Dockett in the lineup, and 4.5 when he was on the sidelines. The run defense is going to be in big trouble this year, I think.
I do think they have an offense that has gained power over the offseason and is coached by one of the better minds as a play caller that we have in Bruce Arians. But, you know, back when you guys were debating whether it isn't a team of ATL because you lose just Darrell Washington out of the gate, I was sort of on Greg's side. Now I'm at the point where it's a tough – this team is going to be scored on.
I still like them as a potential team of ATL because I like Bruce Arians. I like the offense, and I just like the idea of the Cardinals being good and feisty in that division. They're a team I want to root for, and that's how I see the team of ATL. I'm not feeling too good about having them number five in my power poll a week ago. I would definitely knock them down a few pegs. What are your thoughts of Cardinals on team of ATL? I mean, do you agree with Mark? You're out.
I would send them to the elimination chamber.
So, all right, that gets us into it. The elimination chamber. We're going to preview the AFC today. We're going to give you all of our predictions of what teams are going to the playoffs and our power poll. And while we do that, we're also going to start eliminating teams from the team of ATL discussion.
That was rough.
And every time we knock them out, we're going to, you know, the three count. I don't know what they call that. What do they call that, TD?
You got it right. The three count.
Three count?
Yeah, the three count.
You know.
You've been pinned.
Been a wrestling theme today.
They've been eliminated. And so we're going to go through each team and eliminate some potential teams of ATL. And again, if you're a new listener and you weren't with us last year, we chose the Carolina Panthers as the team of the Around the League podcast. That wasn't up until week five, first time we've ever done it. We're going to try to choose a team this year that we root for before the season. So right before week one.
Not happening.
We need a unanimous choice, so that could be difficult. We're going to vote on it officially on the Wednesday podcast right before the season starts. Hopefully we'll have a team of ATL then. We'll see what happens. It's really just a team that we like to root for. Not our pick to win the Super Bowl, just a fun team we want to back.
So it is allowed to go into the regular season if we can't agree on it.
If there's no unanimous pick, that's just how it's going
to
go.
That would also suggest that we're waiting for a more organic team to come to us.
Which I feel like should have been the case all along.
If we can get a team before week one, a lot of the fans want that. I think that's fine if we can all agree on one. If not, so be it. We obviously want Dan to be back in the mix. He will be then, and so he'll be involved. But we're going to go ahead and eliminate some teams without him. And let's start with the AFC East. Do any of these teams interest you enough that they could be a team of ATL?
Well, the Patriots are the only good team here.
Right, but they could be interesting team. We don't think
they could be interesting, but you can't pick the team of ATL as the team that wins its division every year for a decade.
Yeah, I would say the Patriots. Like, I mean, come on.
Right.
That's
the Patriots.
Yeah. Beyond that, I mean, by proxy, I feel like Dan would throw the Jets out there. I think that's a tough choice for me because their offense is
so
dull.
Guess what? It's not happening with me in the room. I'm not going to make the –
over my dead body.
The Jets, you know, I've lost a little bit of my loyalties with the Patriots over the years because I like a lot of teams, but I'm not making the Jets.
This may be the toughest division of all to look to find a team for this contest.
Well,
I'd say no.
Look, we're trying to save some time here. Why don't we just eliminate this entire division? It's easy.
They're gone.
Agree?
I agree.
Wow, that was quick. Counted out the whole division just like that. Let's get into these teams, though. We look at the Patriots and we rank them in our overall power poll this year as the number four team overall, number five overall, and second in the AFC. Do we think they've closed the gap at all with Denver?
Yes.
You do?
Yes, because I thought last playoffs Denver was far and away the best team in the AFC. The only reason the Patriots were where they were was because they didn't face any real competition. They faced a very depleted Colts roster to get into that game.
Yeah, I mean, the Patriots offensively, when they had Gronk down the stretch before he was injured, were as good as any team with on that side of the ball. They go out and get Darrell Revis. You know, the Broncos got tougher on defense, but the Patriots countered. I mean, and you've got Tom Brady, who I think none of us are ready to write off, as some are. That sounds outrageous to me. Of course they've closed the gap because they're the best coach team in football, too.
Look, I agree with you, but I'm a homer. I think when you look at the Broncos on paper, they added a lot on offense. The Patriots really just swapped out cornerbacks, and it was an upgrade for Darrell Revis. No. They're getting back a lot of injured players.
And all their wide receivers, who were so unreliable throughout the early part of last year, have another year in the system, which with Tom Brady is very important.
You wrote up our AFC East predictions and our preview on the Around the League website. Those are going to go up on Thursday. Chris, what do you think is the biggest concern for the Patriots?
I think you could start with the guys who are coming back from injuries, Rob Gronkowski is so important to their offense. It's a concern that we haven't seen him actually in preseason yet. Vince Wilfork, who my sources, a.k.a. Greg Rosenthal, told me, was not even playing that well before he ruptured his Achilles last year. Right. He's coming back. He's 32, 33 years old. Dominic Easley, their first-round pick, coming off of ACL surgery. These are all their concerns, I think. Defensive tackle is a problem spot.
I'm a little worried as a Patriots fan. Every year that they're expected to do really well, and granted, this is on a scale of...
Wait, that's every year.
Well, but it's different. Some years, they're a little more under the radar in terms of people don't think they're really going to be a Super Bowl team. Like last year going into the year, people, for whatever reason, didn't think that. 2010, what I think was their best team since 2007, that was a year a lot of people predicted they wouldn't even make the playoffs because they had a ton of turnover. Gronk and Hernandez were rookies. No one knew they were going to be good.
I don't know, Wes.
And they were
great.
Enjoy
Greg spending a minute plus of this podcast painting a sad story picture for
Patriots fans. All I'm saying is whenever they're expected to be good and they look really good on paper defensively this year and overall it makes sense that they're a strong number two in the AFC and their division stinks, I think the AFC stinks, that's usually when it doesn't go as well. That's all I'm saying. You're doubting.
Well, no, I think one reason that there's not that necessary caution here is that they have, for as long as any team, played in a division that refuses to put anyone else up as a challenger. And really, you look around the AFC East, we've just eliminated them all from contention, and there's a good reason for that.
Well, from rooting for them, you don't give any of these teams a chance to make the playoffs?
The only one that's a wild card for me personally, and it may be illogical, is Miami, because I don't think their defense is a disaster. It can hold its own, and I want to see what the offense can do with Bill Lazor. I think it's a scheme change that's interesting. The Jets, there's issues in the secondary, and I don't trust the quarterback situation there. And the Bills, E.J. Manuel, I mean, it's like the rest of the team is talented, but that is a sticking point.
I after I did all my research and just decided how I was going to predict things, I started to think that the Patriots are just as lucky to be in the AFC East as the Colts are to be in the AFC South. And it wouldn't surprise me if the Dolphins, Jets, and Bills are three of the worst teams in the entire NFL.
Well, let's move on to one of these teams with actual concerns that the Patriots don't have.
What? Well, let's hear it.
The Jets. I think if you talk about the Jets, Mark hit on it. Their secondary, which Rex Ryan insists is not a concern, even though it's by far the worst secondary he's ever coached. And then I don't trust Geno Smith, and I've seen no reason why I should trust him.
I mean, you don't need three cornerbacks in today's league. You need five or six that you can trust. I mean, right now they've got... They're talking about Kyle Wilson's breakout season only because everyone else they've touted is down.
Kyle Wilson got burned deep by Mohamed Sanu. That's hard to do.
They also don't have any pass rush. I think it was a Football Outsider stat, created fewer hurries and pressures last year when they just rushed four compared to any team in the league. And when you look at their roster, it makes sense. You have a great, great, great defensive line. That's why the Jets have a chance to win eight games, is Muhammad Wilkerson and Sheldon Richardson and Big Snacks. But those guys aren't pass rushers. They're unbelievable run stuffers. They're good at pushing the pocket, especially Wilkerson. But this isn't a team that has anyone coming from the outside and rushing.
And how do you manufacture that rush when you can't rely on your cornerbacks?
I
don't think you can. In Miami, do we think that there's any friskiness possible here because Ryan Tannehill is ready for a third-year breakout?
I think that's possible, and I agree with Mark. I'm very intrigued by Bill Lazor's offense. I think with me, their questions start with the offensive line, which is being rebuilt but got worked over by Gerald McCoy last week, and this has been a problem for a while. I just don't know about that whole team, really.
And behind that line, you know, they're counting on Lamar Miller to be their version of LeSean McCoy if they're going to run the Eagles-centric offense. And, I from what I've seen, yes, he's got athletic abilities. There's no question about that. But I'm not sure about him as a featured back yet. Another question mark.
The Bills have a talented roster, and yet...
Do they?
I think they do. They have Marcel Darius. They have a lot of talented players on their defensive line, Mario Williams, They've lost Kiko Alonso and Jairus Byrd, of
course.
Two
of their top five talents they've lost.
I like their left tackle, Cordy Glenn, if he gets back on the field. Sammy Watkins. I like their receiver group. I don't think it's a terrible team. I would take that roster over the Dolphins roster.
It's I would take the Dolphins roster because they don't have a sinkhole at quarterback.
Are we giving up on EJ Manuel already?
I am. I don't think I was ever in on him, but yes, I'm giving up
He's
on
a
him.
Tough watch.
Mark, you have the Bills in last place. You have them well behind the Dolphins and Jets in your power poll.
They are going to, and I'm not. This is not a commentary on Sammy Watkins, who has got a great future, but I think they went high, giving away a number one pick. That's going to be an interesting selection for Cleveland next May.
It's crazy how down we all are on the Bills. We all had them in last place. Our power poll had the Patriots winning the division, going away. The Dolphins actually, our consensus, if you add them all up, the Dolphins were our number two team in the division. They were 24th overall, so still not very high. Jets at 26, Bills at 29. And so basically when you add up what we thought, the AFC East is going to be one of the worst divisions in the league, and they have to play the NFC North out of division when they play out of conference. I think there could be a lot of losses there and a lot of chances for the Lions and the Vikings and the Bears and the Packers to make hay against this AFC East. Let's talk about a more exciting division, your AFC North, Mark Sessler. Do you think there is a heavy favorite in this division?
I think there is an increasingly heavy favorite. This is going to be a rough division where I don't think the winner is going to come out with 13 wins. It's going to be more like a 10-6 type winner, and I see that as the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think we all do. I mean, they've done too much on both sides of the ball. The Pittsburgh a couple years ago looked like they were ready to maybe slowly nosedive into a decline phase. And I think that the front office deserves some credit for what they've done. That's not the case at all. And, in fact, they've gained ground, I think, on the other teams in the division.
I never would have thought in February that we would all pick the Steelers to win the division. It's weird we agreed so much, and we have them as the number six team overall in our preseason power poll. We're drinking the Steelers Kool-Aid.
Which means they should probably be team of ATL.
Ooh. Well,
they have exciting players. Mark has been fired up about Dree Archer and his 4.26 speed. Ryan Shazier looks like a cheetah playing linebacker. They've got some fun guys to watch.
They definitely are not getting eliminated today. We're going to decide next week who the team of ATL is, or in a couple weeks. But we're going to carry these teams over. If any of us want to carry the team over, we're going to do it. I want to carry the Steelers over. Wes does. Mark, you at least think they're going to be good.
I do. I've discussed this with Wes many times. I am not going to, if I had my choice, I would not veto them, but I will not vote for them either because I have a soul.
Hmm.
But,
but it has to be unanimous. You are vetoing them. You at least have to make a stand.
We can get into it later, but go on to the next round.
Okay, so they're gonna move on. Chris and I have the Ravens in the playoffs, and the Around the League team, if you add up all our picks, has the Ravens in the playoffs really as the sixth seed. So I think the argument here is that the offensive line gets better, that the offense really gets better from in terms of being a sinkhole last year to being average or even a little above average.
I'm buying into the offensive turnaround. I think they lead the NFL in preseason rushing average behind this offensive line, and they have yet to give up a sack. Now, it's preseason numbers. It doesn't mean a whole lot, but there are signs there. Ray Rice looks quicker. Bernard Pierce looks good. I think Steve Smith still has a lot left in the tank. And I think this Gary Kubiak offense really fits Joe Flacco well.
Yeah, I went with Cincy over Baltimore as a playoff team. They got into my slot, I think it was fifth or sixth there, a wild card team for sure behind Pittsburgh. And I don't see a lot of difference between – I think it comes down to the last week of the season like it has in the AFC North for a couple years. I just think that Cincinnati – I think we don't want to see them in the playoffs because they produced three of the most boring postseason shows in our life's history on consecutive Saturday afternoons, I believe, and they've gone defunct each time. And Baltimore could outshine them. But Cincy does have a lot of talent. It's hard to look at that team and say, oh, here's a real dark spot that's going to keep them out.
I think just the law of, I don't know, there's something about that team playing in that division. It's a lot of tough games that we've bagged on Andy Dalton for so long that I guess I believe it, even though Hugh Jackson's there, even though he's playing well in the preseason, ultimately I think he's the third best quarterback in that division, and I think it shows up that they don't win enough games in the division.
Here's the one problem for Cincinnati long term is Dalton's going to have his third offensive coordinator in as many years when Hugh Jackson becomes the coach of the Cowboys next offseason.
Ooh! So you think they're going to have a big offensive explosion if Hugh Jackson gets that job?
I think he's going to be rightly seen as a guy.
Yeah.
I think he's gonna do a lot for this offense. I think a lot of us think he's an upgrade over Gruden. I think he's sort of an underrated play caller.
History is working against the Bengals as a team that lost three straight playoff openers. I think there might only be one team in NFL history that's ever gone back a fourth time after doing that.
Could the Bengals be, in a sense, average enough to do that, though, a fourth time?
Could they be the most average team in
there
NFL?
Have been
well,
a lot
slightly
of
above
the
average.
The most average playoff entry of all time.
They could be.
The defense has been great year after year, and no one's talked about whether it's going to hurt them if Mike Zimmer leaves. I think that's a big loss. I mean, Mike Zimmer's gone, and he's really cooked up some great performances out of that secondary. You know, they love their rookie, Denard, their first-round pick, but I don't know. When you look at the talent in the back end, it's not that exciting. You got Vontaze Burfict, who signed a big contract extension reportedly on Wednesday. He's good. But if you look at the back seven, to me, it's not that impressive. I like that we all agreed on the Bengals. We had them just out of the playoffs. So any Bengals fans, it's not like we thought your team stunk. We had them as the number seven team in the AFC. I had them just a little bit lower than that. But overall, we kind of viewed them as a team that was in the top 15 overall and just out of the playoffs. Let's move on to the worst division in football, the AFC South. Do we think the Colts get challenged in any way?
I have the other three teams in the division in my bottom five. Maybe if I would have known how the Cleveland quarterback situation played out.
You can change it now. Who cares?
I might throw Cleveland, no offense, Mark, but I might throw them into the last spot in my power rankings.
I'd have a tough time with that based on what we're seeing from their defense, but it's hard to argue with a whole lot better than that if the quarterback situation is a swarming mess.
I like them a lot better. I like Cleveland. I like Cleveland as a middle-of-the-pack team. I like them as a 6-7 win type of team. Why not? That defense is
Why
great.
Why not? Quarterback. That's what it always comes down to.
I think you can win 6 or 7 games with a great defense and a lousy quarterback. We see it. I mean, EJ Manuel, they won 6 games last year. I mean, granted, 6-10 isn't too exciting, but I think they could win 6 or 7 games with a good coach and a really great defense.
I agree with Wes's. I had the rest of the AFC South below Indianapolis from area 24 on down through 32. And my 24 team was Jacksonville. I think they are going to have a turning point moment this year where they're more like the Cleveland team you're describing. They may not have a perfect situation at quarterback, but they've got a lot of hope, and they've got some other moving parts. They're very well coached, I think.
There's a chance in this division for the second-place team to make a run at the playoffs because you have such an easy schedule. You're playing the rest of the division. The out-of-division schedule is not that tough for this division. I think they play the NFC East, which is ideal. So I don't know. Isn't there a chance that one of these teams, the Titans, the Texans, or the Jaguars, get a little lucky and they're in the mix, let's say, in week 14, still competing for a playoff spot?
Well, it's so hard because the Texans, for me, would be the obvious choice, but then I'd have to believe that Ryan Fitzpatrick could do that, and I have no belief that he could do that. I would think that Locker is the friskiest quarterback outside of Andrew Luck, but the rest of that roster doesn't really have any stars on it.
It's, you know, the Titans in a weird way remind me of last year's Chargers, where we all want to automatically overlook them. I'm not saying they're the same team, but they've got a good coach in Wisenhunt, and if Locker stays healthy, they've got some other parts. And again, if the schedule helps them out, we can't get all these right. We're looking at the South.
No, we're gonna get every single one of them.
We're writing.
Boom.
We're writing the South off entirely for the third year in a row, and things change. We're going to be surprised.
They haven't gotten us wrong, or they haven't made us look stupid in a while. I agree that the Titans could be interesting because they have a lot of offensive pieces. I mean, they have a quarterback that has some talent, a good coach. Their offensive line, at least it looks respectable.
Should be really good.
It should be good, but Levitre wasn't as good as you expect. Roos is a guy they're trying to replace. You signed Michael Orr for right tackle. I don't know if that's like a gangbusters line. You lose Munchak, who was an O-line guy, although I don't know if that ever really translated.
Then Zach Mettenberger comes in week three and throws for 4,000 yards.
Sets the record for most strip sacks.
What about
with his motion?
Yeah. Well, what about overlooking Bortles here? Why can't Blake
Bortles?
Well, if
the Jaguars are going to overlook him, why shouldn't we?
I have the Jacksonville Jaguars as my second team.
Yeah, that's true. You had him 24th overall, though, so not a huge show of faith.
Not burning down society necessarily, but.
That's about where I had him, too. And I have them as the second place team in that division as well. I think the Jaguars have a chance. I just don't know if they can score enough points. Like, even if Blake Bortles does start and looks good, what are the chances that that equates to more than 17 points a game?
Well, he hasn't faced really any blitzes or any first-team defenses yet. That's a lot different than what he's done. And like you said, we can see what traits he has and be high on him because he's played well. But that doesn't mean he's going to play well against NFL starters when defensive coordinators start scheming against him.
Do we think the Colts are a legit championship contender?
No, I think they have too many roster holes. And as great as Ryan Grigson was his first year at general manager, this roster has the same holes it did a couple of years ago.
At one point you were thinking –
I was ready to – pick them as a Super Bowl team, albeit an incomplete one. I mean, we've seen teams with a 32nd ranked defense go to the Super Bowl in the last 7 years. So you don't need to be perfect, but the Colts concern me. They're going to be a very interesting offense, but Wesley's right. It's like the holes persist. The same stories I remember writing when they lost to the Ravens 2 years ago. Like, that issue still is around in terms of their offensive line, in terms of Andrew Luck still running for his life. How long can that last?
Only one of us even put the Colts into the top 10 teams in the NFL. Even though we all think that they could win the division, there wasn't a lot of faith that the Colts are legit at all. They finished behind these teams in our power poll: the Bears, the Ravens, the Eagles, the Chargers, the Cardinals. So we tend to see the Colts closer to a team like the Redskins and Lions in our power poll than we do the real upper echelon. Maybe we're not giving Andrew Luck enough credit.
I was just saying, the only reason they're that high is because of Andrew Luck.
All right.
I put them 9th in my power rankings, and it was basically that much faith in Andrew Luck, because the rest of the roster, okay, they're good at tight end and wide receiver, but offensive line, running backs, and a defense that got trampled last year in the playoffs, how are we supposed to be optimistic about that?
They're a team that we don't see doing well in terms of going far in the playoffs, but we do, as a group, pick them to win the division by leaps and bounds. No other team in that division is in our top 25 of our power poll. We have the Jaguars as the second-place team in the AFC South, but deep at 28, Texans as the 30th team in the league, and the Titans as the 31st. So we pretty much agreed on burying the AFC South. So let's, now that we predicted those two divisions, let's go back into the elimination chamber. Decide on if any of these teams we want to consider as the team of around the league. In the AFC South, you guys want to throw out any teams that you at least want to push forward for a week?
I would like to save the Colts.
Okay.
I would save the Colts. God, it's hard to save anyone else in that division.
I wouldn't mind talking about the Jaguars.
That'd be either
a fun team to root for.
I could go. I don't want to. Let's move them forward another week.
Yeah, why?
Can
not?
We save the Texans for Clowney and Watt purposes?
No. That's you can if you want to put them forward.
I would like to save the Texans for a little bit.
As long as you don't eliminate other teams based on bad quarterback.
Yeah, I don't
play.
Know because there's no chance that they're going right, to be
all
the
right.
team, right?
They're gone.
All right, let's get him out of there.
What if Case Keenum takes over?
Well, I think you and I are closer to being Keenumites than others, but
let's get rid of him. And we almost forgot about the Titans. There's no way we're making this vanilla.
No, that's tough.
All right, well, we're moving the Colts forward. We're moving the Jaguars forward. Bortles is taking first-team snaps this week in practice. He is playing with the starters in the third preseason game. I know they've said Henny's the starter, but I feel like there has to be a 5-10% chance he's the week one starter, or else they wouldn't be doing this. So maybe if Bortles is the week one starter, Jaguars.
That's why we keep him alive. Wait, did we didn't discuss the North, though?
No, we're moving on to that next.
All right.
Let's do the North. I think the Browns, we have to move forward.
I think we moved the whole.
Oh, wow. You don't want it.
I would get rid of the Browns in a heartbeat after they chose Brian Hoyer as the starter.
Yeah.
But what if Manziel's in there a week in week two? Or what if Manziel becomes the team?
Out of Johnny Manziel. I don't think he's helping them this year.
Wow. I like the Browns. Let's at least move them forward a week. Bengals, no way. We're not rooting on the team.
No, I got no interest in the Bengals.
Let's get rid of the Bengals. Ravens, we think, are going to make the playoffs, but can you really imagine rooting for the Ravens?
I can. They have Steve Smith.
Really? You want to push them? They're an unlikable team.
We're pushing the Jaguars and Browns.
Okay, I guess. We're being nice.
No comment on the Ravens. I'll let Wes have his way.
There's no chance the Ravens are going to be the team of ATL. The Steelers are going through since we like them so much. That brings us to our final division of the day, the AFC West. A division that wasn't really hard to pick first place. Did you guys debate any about second place in terms of the Chargers and the Chiefs? Did you want to give the Chiefs any chance at all?
I did not. After seeing Kelce look really good and Dwayne Bowe look a lot better, maybe I would reconsider. But I think, for me, the offensive line is a major, major red flag there.
I had the Chiefs ranked 12 spots lower than the Chargers in my power poll. It went Denver, San Diego, Kansas City, Oakland. And I think that the Chargers, for me, are a very interesting team in the AFC.
The Chargers, to me, smell like a team of around the league. I'm just going to say it. Don't they have a good chance?
No.
Philip, you don't think so.
Well, this is just going to end up being Wes's team anyway. No. So, you know.
Philip Rivers doesn't excite me. I know you like him, but to me, he's not an exciting quarterback.
What about
their defense has no stars on it, what to speak of?
Oh, I don't know if you've met the guy named Corey Legit. A lot of jersey sales for that guy. Come on, get it together.
I think they're an interesting team. I would push them on for sure.
A lot of people, yeah, we have to push them forward. I mean, we put them in the top, I think, 8 teams overall in our power poll. We were very high on the Chargers, almost a consensus that they were going to make the playoffs. Only one of us had them out of the playoffs, which was surprising to me, and that was Kevin Patra. The Chargers are going to move forward. Do we think there's any chance that they challenge the Broncos in this division?
No.
Who played the Broncos better than anyone last year? Chargers.
No.
Not over the course of – if you're talking about winning and ending with a better record against when the NFC West is the other team that they have to
play. That is how – yes, the standings will be determined by wins and losses again.
Well, no, then no. I mean, can they go one – can they beat them once in the season like they did last year? Sure.
Yeah, there's no reason to manufacture some kind of debate here.
That's fair. Pagano, for whatever reason, the Broncos' 3 worst offensive performances until the Super Bowl – yardage-wise, was against the Chargers, all 3. So they had good plans for them. And if we see the Chargers as a team that's clearly the number 5 seed, which is what our consensus is, to me, I mean, they should be in the mix. It's a very tough out-of-division schedule with the NFC
What did
West.
Pagano's defenses do against the other teams in the league?
Not very good, at least there not until December. That defense is confusing to me. I don't know why it was so bad, but there aren't, like you said, a lot of stars there. Are we thinking the Chiefs are going to sink to the bottom of the NFL or just sink to mediocrity?
I think mediocrity. I think they have a really good front 7 on defense. Alex Smith is solid. I feel like their weapons should be a little bit better this year.
They could be, if you wanted to go from worst to first, right in the middle of the pack, could be Kansas City, right around 8-8.
I think even if they are an 8-8 type of team, at least compared to what they were last. I think they were only an 8-8 team last year. That's the thing. They got lucky.
Everything
went right.
They were 9-0 with the easiest schedule possible. They had the second fewest adjusted games lost out of starters, according to Football Outsiders, and that basically means they had great injury luck. They were really healthy all year, and they were not a good team down the stretch. They were 2-6 with a lousy defense. I think they could sink past the middle. I had them as the 24th team in the league. I just think they're like a 6 or 7 win team. And even though that win total is giving Andy Reid some credit, that he'll just cook up some magic.
They're strange. If they, for instance, lost Jamal Charles, they're a 4 win team. I mean, they're that kind of built where you don't see the other parts there.
I could see Alex Smith playing well and them going 7-9. Like, if Alex Smith regressed, they could be a 4 or 5 win type of team. With this schedule and this division, there any chance they slip behind your Oakland Raiders, Wes?
No chance. No team has a possibility to slip behind the Raiders when the Raiders see Matt Schaub every day in practice. They have to know the arm's not there, and they still continue to trot him out at quarterback, and it's a charade.
I could not agree more, because Oakland, to me, is really, really taking it to their fan base when you're continuing to roll out this PR campaign about Matt Schaub.
They have given their fan base a collective wedgie.
I think they are coming to terms. We talked about last show of what Schaub is, and that's a guy that can't throw deep at all. And now they're trying to coach around him, and that's just a losing proposition.
Coach around him with what?
Throwing short passes.
Ian was in their camp the other day, and he was told by them, NFL media insider Ian Rappaport was told, we are going to use a good offensive line and running game to hide Matt Schaub's limitations and coach him up and adjust the play calling. I don't know if they've seen the running game and offensive line in the preseason. It's non-existent.
Right. They don't have the parts to do this.
You know what's crazy? You know what's the most interesting position to me on the entire team is wide receiver. And what do you have there? A bunch of guys who can run down the field other than Rod Streeter. I mean, you have Denarius Moore. You have Andre Holmes, who's got some speed. You have James Jones, maybe not a burner, and yet there's really not anyone to get them the ball on the outside. This isn't a bad – they have enough weapons with Michael Rivera to have a halfway decent passing attack.
You know when they started to make some plays?
Right, without a quarterback.
They started to make some plays when Derek Carr was throwing the football.
He got a little lucky, but I think, yeah. What's the over-under for when Derek Carr starts?
Week 2.
Yeah.
Stop.
It is
for
fair.
Real.
They paid him too much money. They're going to keep
shopping. No, they didn't. Look, these weirder things have happened. I don't think you understand how done Matt Schaub is.
And consider this. Forget money. This coaching staff doesn't need to worry about money. They're not going to have jobs themselves if they float this season the way last year went.
Well, that's the tricky
part.
They're
already done. Their coaching staff and GM, they got to go. They got to go.
Reggie McKenzie needed to hit home runs with the few drafts that he's had. He just does not have a lot of time.
He should be canned just for what he's done at quarterback since he's been hired.
Oof. So
drafted Tyler Wilson in the 4th round, signed Matt Flynn as a starter, then cut him after one start, and then traded for a washed-up matchup.
I think he inherited the worst depth chart situation that any GM's inherited in the last 5 or 6 years.
He had a really tough.
That is absolutely true. Absolutely true. And he has exacerbated the problem.
I tend to agree. He's a media favorite. I think
he's a nice guy.
Right.
He also drafted Carr. And if Carr comes in and shows progress, then that storyline changes. And
true.
He did find someone.
I'll grant you that, yeah.
Well, the Raiders were the team we agreed on the most in our power poll. All 4 of us that voted had them either as the 31st or the 32nd team in the league. So by consensus, we have the Raiders as the very worst team in the league. The Chiefs, you guys basically saw as a middle-of-the-pack team. I had them a little lower. Overall, they ended up 18th on our power poll, so that's about a 7-9 record. We like the Chargers going to the playoffs, and we like them as a top-10 team. So this is a legit team that can not only compete in the AFC West or in the AFC, but can maybe beat the 49ers in one of those non-conference games. You know, that can beat the Cardinals and Rams, because they're going to have to do that to be a top-10 team. And then we have the Broncos as our AFC favorites, 4th overall in our power poll, so not as good as the NFC teams. But I guess by our predictions, we have the Broncos going back to the Super Bowl.
We do.
I don't agree with that. I'm putting the Patriots back in.
Well,
teaser.
They have to be the heavy, heavy favorites to be meeting again in the conference championship game.
Right. It's weird that there is some serious – it looks like there's separation again in the AFC. I'm going to pick the same Super Bowl I've picked the last few years, but we'll hold on that until the next show. Let's finally get back in the elimination chamber. Who should we move forward, and who should we advance? Let's start about the Broncos. Is there any way we consider the Broncos as a team of ATL?
You can't. Come on.
I don't think so. They're too much favorites.
Yeah, you're too good. Broncos, you're done. I'll just even get through with it. Raiders.
You're out.
And the Chiefs.
No.
No.
Not good. And I'm pushing the Chargers forward, and they're one of my couple of favorites. If I had to pick two or three teams, they're definitely in that group. I like the Chargers. So we'll decide on the team of ATL in a couple weeks. We've moved those guys forward. We're going to preview the NFC on Friday. We're going to do our fantasy preview, our long-awaited fantasy preview. So long-awaited, most people will have done their fantasy drafts by the time they listen to it.
Next thing.
Next Wednesday will be our fantasy show. Any final thoughts on a momentous day for you, Chris?
No final thoughts.
We want to get out of here.
We're not going to let you perish.
No.
Well, I feel like we can turn this into a celebration, a gala, if you will.
Oh.
I like that.
We could invite chefs in. We could make this a very safe experience.
How about this happens on the Food Network?
It could be. They could make these softball pants into a dish that maybe you guys will even want to try.
Ooh.
I would try it.
As long as
it doesn't have meat in it.
For solidarity, maybe we should all go down eating some softball pants.
I'll eat a vegan portion of softball pants being fried up or cooked or put in a soup.
Make sure none of the zipper parts get in your meal.
Maybe I can get Emeka, my wife, into the spirit.
I like this.
Who knows? All right. For Mark Sessler, Chris Wesseling, Dan Hansis, thanks for stopping by, and TD Behind the Glass, I'm Greg Rosenthal. We'll see you Friday.
Daddy got to get home and babysit.
It's not a babysit if it's your baby.
People always tell me that. I totally disagree. It's absolutely not true.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day. And smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.